Welcome to the podcast. We are the panelists on Blazer's Edge. I'm Tara, and this is Joe.
Hi, everyone.
And we are here to open our hearts and spill our guts and talk about everything we love about the Portland Trail Blazers and the NBA. Subscribe to the podcast with Stitcher or iTunes or whatever podcaster catcher you use. Our host site is Blazers Edge, where you can get all the news and analysis about the Blazers that you could possibly want. And don't think that because the Blazers season is over that we are taking the summer off. There will be all sorts of new content all summer long. There will be coverage of the draft, free agency, and much, much more. So please keep checking BlazersEdge.com to find out what is going on with your Portland Trail Blazers.
That was very enthusiastic.
Well, you know, we got to keep it going, you know, just because our boys aren't playing right now doesn't mean that we are done with the Trail Blazers. So how you doing, Joe?
You know, I'm great. It's been like 72 and sunny here, which is crazy.
In Alaska.
Boiling hot. Yeah, I'm like boiling hot all the time. And I've gotten a nice suntan. And I took advantage of one of those nice days and got on a boat with one of the perks of this job that I do is that the vendors that we work with like to schmooze us a little. So they put us all on a boat on Sunday and took us out to Huna, which is a little native village of like 700 people, but it also happens to be where the world's tallest zip line lives.
Oh,
so it's like a 1,300 or 1,400 foot zip line. So you literally have to take a 40 minute bus ride up to the top of this little mountain. And then you hike over to where the zip line takes off. And I'm a thrill seeker and stuff does not scare me. But when those gates open for like a split second, I was thinking to myself, oh,
and so you did it?
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's so cool.
It takes 90 seconds. That's how long it takes. And you're going 60 miles an hour.
Oh my God. How do you end a zip line like that? Like,
so it's fortunately not one that you have to break yourself because it's just too fast and too intense. So it's self-breaking, but there's really no lead up to it or gradual slowdown. It's just like bam, and you hit like the breaking part of the line and you just flip backward a little, and it's so much fun.
So you don't like crash into a wall? Goes up something to slow you down? Or
no, but it was really fun. And then the last few days have, of course, in true Alaska fashion, been cold and rainy again, so I'm about to don all of my gear, 7 or 8 layers, and go stand out in a booth all day on the docks and do my job. So it's been going pretty well. How about you? You were just traveling.
Yes. Yeah. That sounds, first of all, you are so brave. I did nothing brave like that while I was on my vacation. But my son is finishing up college, and he actually, he got an internship back here. So we went back to the Boston area to move him back home so that he could
do
his internship. Yeah, so that was really exciting. And I'm going to tell you a little bit more about it later on in the podcast because we got to go to the Basketball Hall of Fame and it was super fun. So we will talk about that later. But we should probably talk about the team first and talk about how the Blazers did and how the season ended.
Yeah, it's all over. I'm kind of sad. I mean, I have mixed feelings because I'm sad, but I'm so damn proud at the same time. So I don't know. I think it was a really great year and I can't complain. And I think that the Blazers developed really well over the year. I think they just got better and better and better. And I think we're on the brink of being pretty elite. I mean, what do you think about it? Do you think that they learned anything this postseason?
So I think that they definitely grew during the regular season, you know, the way we expected that they would. And I think that they are exponentially better now because of their experience in the postseason. I think they are a much better team. They were a much better team on May 11th than they were on April 17th. And during that just really short period with that intense amount of time that they got to spend playing the Clippers and Golden State Warriors. I mean, that is, to me, is just invaluable. And it kind of reminds me of, I don't know about you, but I played musical instruments when I was growing up as a kid. And, you know, I played in the orchestra during the school year. And then during the summer, I went to music camp. And during the summer, you know, you pay four, three times a week and you for 45 minutes and you practice and, you know, you develop, you know, if you do everything right, you develop and you're a better, you know, violin player, at the end of the year than you were at the beginning of the year. But then in the summer, you go to music camp and you play music all day long, every day with all kinds of really great players. And you learn so much just because of that intensive experience. So that's what the playoffs are to me. The playoffs are like when you go to music camp in the summer and you just get that much more time to play with the best, to learn with the best, and just get that much more exposure to people who are even better than you are. And there's just no way you can't grow just so much from that kind of experience. So I think that I think it was a great thing that we made it into the postseason. Even if we'd only been in round one, I think we would have learned a lot. But the experience we got playing against the Golden State Warriors, I mean, it just doesn't get any better than that.
You know, I don't know what kind of music student you were, but I played the clarinet, and on the last day of school, I was like, I'm packing this puppy up and I'm not gonna look at it for the next 3 months.
Well, then
But
you would have been headed for the draft.
I guess I'm not of the Blazers caliber as a musician. I also haven't touched my clarinet in probably a decade, so
Well,
I gave up on that, but
I was a viola player and I really didn't take it that seriously, but I know that I was super inspired every summer when I got to go to that experience and really have the intensive ability to see progress like on a daily basis.
yeah.
And that's what I saw in our guys. I thought I saw daily progress. Like every game, they were able to do something better than they had done the previous game.
Yeah, I was thinking about how I felt about the postseason, and I was thinking about all the more analytical pieces to it and how they did statistically, and kind of thinking about how I felt about their performance on that level. But what I'm really sticking to for what I feel like they learned and did best this postseason is I think that they really embraced the never give up, never surrender sort of attitude. And I think that they learned that they're just always going to have to play like that. They're always going to, I mean, it, for the foreseeable future, they're going to be considered the underdogs. They're going to be considered the ones without the traditional superstar. They're going to have to play with that chip on their shoulders. And I think they learned to just really embrace it and make it work in their favor. And that's what I like. And the other thing is, I've been saying all season long that I think we lack a grit and grind kind of player. And I realized just yesterday while thinking about this that they collectively are the grit and grind team. And they refused to give up. I mean, even in game five against Golden State, they nearly had it, you know? They nearly had it. They got within two, I think, within or with 1 minute left or under a minute to play. And they just didn't really ever want to let it fully go. And I think two of those games that we lost, we specifically could have taken had we had just a slight smidge more experience and didn't make as many mistakes. So I'm really focusing on the intangibles and what we learned from the playoffs and with the intangibles. The other thing is, I think people are not talking enough about Damian Lillard. And I don't mean that in a he's so awesome, he's our superstar, he's our best player. I think that's why people aren't talking about him, because he has been phenomenal all season long and everybody's sung his praises. But I think that there's a certain degree here, if we're going to talk about what we need to do different and how we need to improve in future seasons, that Damian Lillard is also responsible for, and people are letting him get away with it. So don't get me wrong. I have come to love Dame tremendously. I think he's a phenomenal basketball player. But Damian still needs to work. He improved his defense tremendously, but he also needs to learn to become more of an elite defender if he wants to be that number one point guard in the league, if he wants to compete with the Chris Pauls, you know?
So what would he have to do to become that elite defender?
I think it just takes time and experience, because he's already way better with his spacing. He already uses his hands much better. He is already using his speed on defense when he wasn't doing that before. He was really just reserving that for offense. So he's doing it better. I think he just needs the time. And he's also going to hero ball in these clutch last few minutes of these games when they're close. And Yes, we all love it when he hits that shot. We all love it when he drains that crazy three and, you know, the stadium goes crazy and we're all praising him for taking that risk. And I love that they're taking risks. I think that's why they got this far in the playoffs, because they're not losing confidence and they're just putting all of their eggs into their own basket, right? But there are some scenarios where I'd rather that Damian shoots 7 for 20 and has 11 assists instead of shooting 7 for 24 and having 7 assists like he did in game 5. There are moments where he should be passing that ball. He should be taking it to the open man, dishing it out to the open man. And I think he gets in this hero ball mode because he has been praised so much and he's been so successful that he's not always making the right decisions. And he will. People forget, because of the high level that he plays at, that he is also still a young player. He's going into his 5th season. Is that correct? Right. He's going into his 5th season now. And most players aren't playing at the level that he is until about this time. Right. And he's already been doing it for a couple of seasons. So no love lost for Dame. And I'm not trying to bring him down, but I don't think he's exempt from having to make improvements in the offseason.
Well, I think one of the things that I've really liked about him and what he's been talking about this year and why I think he's such an effective leader is I don't think he's satisfied either. I think that I can't remember who wrote the article, but somebody talked about him like being worried that everybody on the team was going to be, you know, was going to soak in all this praise and be like, yay, we did it. But then realizing that, no, they all feel the same way. They all feel like they can improve more, that they're not going to be satisfied with this, you know, to the fans, very satisfying year. But I think it's great that to them, it wasn't satisfying and they want more. So I'm looking forward to next year. I always prefer being the underdog, which is probably why I was really looking forward to this season, because I was like, I can't, like, as a fan, I have a really hard time with the pressure of expectations. And, you know, when they're expected to, like, last year, like the previous year, when they were pretty much expected to win, like every game we were pretty, you know, not every game, but admit, you know, most of the games we were favorited to win, that was like super stressful. But this year it was like, you know, heck, we stole one. You win the ones you should and some of the ones you shouldn't, and you're satisfied with that. So I know that the guys expect that they can win every single game. But from a fan's perspective, to me, next year is going to be much more stressful because they came so far so fast this year. So I actually did pull up some statistics that show kind of their to compare just like really basic statistics between the playoffs and the regular season. So I'll just was going to point out a couple of things that they did improve on. You know me, I'm a fanalist, not an analyst. So this do not go very deep. But
Me too. I'm sitting here like,
I'm just looking for trends.
Like, but, Dame, don't play hero ball.
So some of the things that improved from the regular season to the playoffs were we had more field goal attempts. So I think that's an improvement. I'm not sure, you know, kind of has to do with pace and who we're playing. But during the regular season, we averaged 85.9 field goal attempts, and that went up to 89.1 in the playoffs. Our shooting percentage got better. Our field goal percentage actually went slightly down, but our three percentage went slightly up.
That's because they lived and died by the three, which we talked about.
Right.
Like, they went for it all the time with the three, which sometimes I love and sometimes I hate. But, you know, that's the game they chose to play.
Sure. And you know, it's good that they didn't get it worse, right? Because then it'd be like we'd be really questioning that decision. But right. If you look month by month from October to April, the three-point shooting percentage steadily went up. So they steadily got better throughout the whole season, and they ended up averaging 37% in the regular season, and they did slightly better at 38.1% in the playoffs. So their free throw attempts, they had more free throw attempts and more free throws made, which I don't know if that was skewed because there was some hack of stuff going on back and forth, especially in that first series. But our rebounds went up. We went from averaging 45 during the season to 47.6. And our turnovers went down, which I think is great considering we were playing in the playoffs. At the fact that our turnovers went down from 14.6 to 13.1 in the playoffs, I thought that was a really good indicator.
Well, it should be going up because playoffs basketball is a whole different beast. Like you have to play at a completely different level than you did in the regular season, in my opinion. I mean, even the Golden State Warriors, I feel like step it up and work harder. And sometimes it works in their favor and sometimes it doesn't because sometimes you have an off night for any given team, right? But there is a whole degree of stepping up and playing at a different level in the playoffs that I think every team really embraces. And it's a totally different kind of basketball, in my opinion. I had this conversation with my friend Steve last night. Actually, we were watching the OKC Warriors game, which, by the way, how excited am I that OKC won that?
Yeah, let's segue into that next, but finish your thought.
And he asked me, he said, because he knows I love football too, and he is a huge football fan. And he said, Joe, do you think that football, that the Super Bowl is more exciting than all of the playoffs for NBA or vice versa? And we were both like, even him, as like football's his sport, it's his thing. And he still said, collectively, if I had the choice of just getting to watch the Super Bowl or getting to watch all of the NBA playoffs, no doubt in my mind, he said I would take the NBA playoffs
Oh,
because
100%.
it's a totally different game and it's so exciting to watch. And it's just, you're seeing players come out of the woodwork and you're seeing superstars go to a whole nother level. And it's really fun basketball to watch. So it makes sense to me that the Blazers improved in a lot of areas because they stepped up to the plate and they played the game they knew they had to play.
Well, and it showed me that the work that they did over the year wasn't just luck and fluke. And that's one thing I'm doing over the summer is I'm trying to figure out how you can measure luck and emotion in your game. Because I think that a lot of people before the playoffs could have said, well, they got lucky in this, they got lucky in that, and still people are going to say they got lucky because of injuries in the Clippers. But I think that they stepped up and they took their luck and they made the most out of it and they showed that they could run with the best of the best. And you know, they could have gotten in there and just been like had deer in the headlights and you know, fallen apart. And there's been other seasons where we made it to the playoffs, but then we just were, you know, were not able to perform at all at the playoff level. And I was really excited that this scrappy team was able to do it.
Yeah, they're the grit and grind team. And I don't think it's the traditional grit and grind like people used to look at Memphis, for example. But it's Rip City kind of grit and grind, and it's our own kind of drumbeat, and I think that's what's really unique about this team, and I think that's always been what's unique about this team, and I love it. They've completely won me over. I was hesitant about them at the beginning because I just didn't think I could get over last year's starting five, which still remains my favorite starting five of all time, I think. And I just didn't know if I would ever have that kind of love and devotion and loyalty on quite the same level as I did. And they've won me over, and I'm really, really loving the direction that this team is taking. And I do think they're on the brink of being elite. I think the only piece we're missing is a solid starting five. And if we could get that,
So you're thinking that you still, you know, last year's starting five was still your favorite starting five, but as far as the team goes, this team itself has won you over. So you're not like, it's not like you love our current starting five more than you like last year's starting five, but you believe in the direction of the team.
And I never lost faith in the Blazers as an entity because I'm too loyal for that. Like I would never cut and run. I would never pick another team. I will always, till the day I die, be the number one Blazers fan. But that warm, fuzzy love, right? That was what was missing for me. There was a disconnect for me with this team, and they've definitely gotten me there. And again, last year's starting five was not statistically the best starting five in NBA's history or in the Blazers' history. And they had their flaws, right? And they had like Robin Lopez. He wasn't necessarily an elite center or anything, but that five is special to me for intangible reasons, and they always will be. So nobody's really going to take that away from them, but at least I really love this current team.
Well, since you brought up last year's starting five, I've been super curious. We've not talked about this yet, but I want to know how you feel about the fact that LaMarcus's season is over, because I thought that he was going to be in the season. I think most people thought he was going to be in playing a lot longer than he is now. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Everyone thought it was going to be Spurs Warriors right now. And I cannot tell you how many text messages I have gotten saying, oh, do you think LaMarcus wishes he had stayed? Do you think LaMarcus is bummed that he got out and or got knocked out? It's, I would say probably at least 30 text messages.
Oh, my gosh.
From friends that have
so
asked
what do
me
you
this
say?
Question.
How do you respond?
You know, I think that LaMarcus had some doubts even from day one. He spent 9 years with this franchise. He built this franchise into being what it is today in his own way. And I think there's always going to be some certain degree of regret or longing for what was. And he went to a team where he had to fall into a rotation and to a mix that was very well established and very fluid, and he had to figure out a way to match up with that, right? And he struggled at first, but I think he ended up having a really great season and finding his stride and playing his ball while still playing Spurs ball, and I don't think anyone can be disappointed in that. I think, of course, he would love to be in the conference finals right now, but he made his decisions for reasons outside of the game of basketball as well, and I think he will have to find a way to be happy or satisfied with that. He's closer to his family. He's closer to his children. He's part of a very historic franchise that don't even think that this hiccup is going to define them. They're going to bounce back. They're going to get to where they need to be. And I truly believe that someday he's going to win a title, and it very well could be with the Spurs.
So you think he's probably doesn't have any regrets. Do you think that, I mean, I heard a lot about him in the first two games, and then I didn't hear much about him later. How do you rate his overall performance in the playoffs? Because, you know, a lot of people talked about here he checked out completely last year.
Well, unfortunately, I didn't get to watch much of that series because I was either traveling through Canada or getting into my first week of work here, which was very hectic. And you have to understand these games when they play Eastern time, they're at like 3:30 or 4:30 my time. And I'm not even close to being done working at that time. So I've missed quite a bit of basketball, but I don't think people understand how logical and level-headed that LaMarcus is. And he's not going to sit there and complain or pine about what could have been. I think he's going to logically process, what do I need to do to be better? What do I need to do to help bring this city another championship? And he's just going to roll forward with that. He's not a brooder. He's not someone that's going to wallow in sorrow and regret. He's going to move forward. And so he may not have had the most stellar performance in the postseason as he wanted to have, but I don't think that that's going to stop him from improving.
Do you really think that the Spurs, as they are now, are going to exist next year? I mean,
oh, no, I think things will change very much. I think Tim Duncan will stick around, but I think his role will become far less prominent. And I think things will have to shake up and change.
They've got to get some youth. I mean,
yeah. They cannot keep going on the path that they are, thinking that they are exempt from aging. So,
right, I know.
So things will change, and I can't say what I think will change for them outside of the fact that I think that Tim Duncan's role is going to change pretty significantly. But I mean, LaMarcus, I love you, man. And I think there will probably be a small, slight part of him that thinks, God, what could I have done if I'd stayed with the Blazers and with this unit? But he's not one that's going to dwell on that. He's going to look forward to the future and be confident in the decisions that he's made and the reasons that he's made them. And I think he's going to be very successful. But you know me, I'll never talk about LaMarcus.
I got to confess, I thought I was a huge LaMarcus fan and I would never, you know, not love him. And it's not that I don't appreciate everything that he did for the franchise, but I got over him way faster than I thought I would. good.
Oh
I
my
mean,
gosh.
I totally appreciate everything that he brought to this franchise, but I didn't realize until he was gone how much everything that the franchise had become was based on his particular skill set. And everything had to function around what LaMarcus could do. And he did a lot. I mean, don't get me wrong. Everything that he did was tremendous, and it was more than anyone ever asked for him when they drafted him. But I didn't realize that it could be so fun without him. Once we were able to free up what our players could do and let them just, I mean, that's the thing about this whole roster that we had this year is they were all players who nobody had really seen what they could do, and for so many of them to step in and show us that they could do more than any of their other teams had ever thought. I mean, that's got to be, I don't know if that's ever happened before with other teams where so many people were, you know, either written off or had not been allowed to flourish in other places and then came in together into one place and all of a sudden we're all like just given the ability to be like, no, we want you to shoot that. No, we want you to make that run. No, we want you to do that thing. I don't know. I thought that was
That sounds like a perfect research project for you. I feel like, especially now that it's summer and things are slowing down,
Yeah.
that that's
Oh, I
that
got
is
plenty of research. I got
that's
plenty
the
of research queued up.
perfect. Why don't you research how many other players have all collectively come to a team to with this written off attitude? I bet you I wouldn't even know how to begin to start researching that. That is all you.
Well, my first thing, like I said, is to figure out what kind of statistics we can use to measure luck and emotion. And I'm making some headway, and I will reveal once I've
I'm
come up with
excited.
it. But we should probably move on. I'll finish up by saying I was so delighted to see the Spurs lose and to see an under like the OKC who like I will admit I had like written them off. I had just assumed the Spurs were going to win, and I was just like, this is so much fun to watch somebody come like barreling in from the outside. And then what they took last night, that was amazing that they were able to
Well,
go in and win at Golden State. That was awesome.
I will admit, well, first of all, I'm never sad to see the Spurs get knocked out because they've been my number two team for a very, very long time, way before LaMarcus. They've always, since the days of the Twin Towers, okay? So they've always been my number two. And of course, it was very sad for me to see them get knocked out, especially with LaMarcus. But OKC deserved to win. They have been playing the greatest basketball, and they're so in sync with each other right now. And Durant and Westbrook are an unstoppable combo right now. I mean, Durant and Westbrook taking over like they did in the fourth quarter against Golden State is what won them that game. So they deserve to be where they're at, and I have no love lost for them. I think I'm happy for them for being there. And I did predict, here we go. Everybody lock it in and make fun of me later. I predicted OKC to win in seven before the series started.
To that they were going to beat San Antonio,
No,
or that they're going to win beat Golden
I
State.
predicted it was yesterday before the game started. I met my friends that are in town. They were in town for a night. And we went to meet and watch the game and have some dinner. And before the game started, they said, "What? Who do you think's going to win this?" And I said, "I think it's going to be OKC in seven."
Okay, well, you know what? It is official now. I can't wait to see if it comes through, you know. This podcast has a pretty good record so far in making
Yeah.
predictions. So
I will admit that part of that is my emotion clouding some of my judgment because I am over Golden State. I have been the whole year. I was very upset when they beat Michael Jordan's record. And then I used to really like Steph Curry. I used to think he was humble and successful and incredibly talented and just a really classy guy. But when he was in Portland, he disrespected Portland and he disrespected the fans and he disrespected our team. When he mocked Damian Lillard's Lillard time and
Oh,
looked up at
yeah.
the crowd and said, Lillard time is over. And I no longer have respect for him. Like that crossed a line to me. And I get that I'm probably being too dramatic about it, and I'll probably get over it in like a month or something, because who cannot like Steph Curry? But right now I'm really over him, and I think that was a inappropriate word, insert here, move. And I think that it really took away a lot from the classy player that I thought that he was. So I am 100% in OKC's corner.
I totally thought that when Steph Curry did that, it indicated that Damian Lillard had gotten in his head. And I was kind of like, oh, you're, I don't know. I just thought that that was pretty funny, that the guy who's supposed to be the greatest, you know, basketball player right now had to, you know, use what we say about Damian Lillard to try to compare himself to him. I don't know. I just thought, and I thought it was funny. And if he doesn't take that thing out of his mouth, like, why does he even wear it? It just, I can't even stand to watch him. Because it's like always, he like dropped it on the floor and then put it back in his mouth. And I'm like, why are you
Five-second rule.
Why are you doing that? I don't know. But I still think they're phenomenal plays. And I'm super excited about this. I think this is going to be a great series.
It's going to be a fun series to watch. And, you know, the Warriors are incredibly successful, especially when they play their type of basketball. And they will definitely make OKC fight for every last game. But hey, we're off to a good start.
Well, and speaking about their kind of basketball, I have a question for you that I've been trying to figure out. When they talk about Golden State and their death lineup, their small ball lineup that Golden State uses so effectively, they've been talking about it all year long.
Yeah, it's their weapon.
And I've been trying to figure out how they're going to apply that against OKC that's had so much success with their tall ball lineup, you know, playing Adams and Kanter together. So what do you think about how Golden State, you know, how small ball has been effective for them? And then do you think that it's going to, if they're going to be able to use it with this next series that they're in right now?
Yeah. Well, I mean, traditionally teams play small ball because they're, you're making a sacrifice to see if another idea will work for you, right? So you're sacrificing length and height and low post defense in place of speed and agility and athleticism and really potent scoring. So that's the idea behind small ball. So a lot of times when teams are playing small ball, they're not necessarily getting a whole lot of rebounds, or they're not necessarily playing very intense defense. But the thing with the Warriors is they are scorching the floor with their shooting percentage, with their small ball lineup, while still pulling down rebounds and playing pretty decent defense. You know, they're a very good two-way team. That's part of why they're so successful. So it's like they're playing small ball, but they're not having to sacrifice what normal teams have to sacrifice. So their small ball lineup is Curry, Thompson, Iguodala, Barnes, and Draymond Green, right? And they don't start, they never start with this lineup, right? It's usually Bogut who's starting, sometimes Azili, but they very consistently go to this lineup. And this lineup at one point in February was shooting 65% from the floor, right? And it was ridiculous. And they're still pulling down massive amounts of rebounds, and there's still a lot of their scoring is still coming in the paint. So they're still playing very physically and aggressively, even though they're small. Another benefit to this particular lineup is that four of the five, Curry's the only exception, are within a couple of inches of each other in size. So they're easily able to switch on defense, and they're not really sacrificing anything because you're replacing the first guy with a very similarly sized
guy. So you never get a situation with like the tall guy and the little tiny guy having to guard him.
I mean, sometimes you do because Curry's pretty small. Curry's only 6'3", you know. But in general, outside of Curry, you can switch easily and still not sacrifice any more height, right? The mismatch will still be the same. So they're just really, really successful with this lineup because they're such a well-rounded team. And they've done it so much together. They have so much experience together. They've been playing this type of ball with this lineup together for a few seasons now, and they've learned to make it really successful. They're very potent, I would say, from both ends of the floor.
So in last night's game, like we mentioned before, OKC has been having a lot of success with Adams and Cantor, two really tall guys. How did it work last night? Or how do you think, and how do you think that they're going to go match up against OKC in particular? Do you think that they might have to adjust, or do you think that they can just go ahead and keep using it the way they've been using it?
No, I think that the Enes Kanter combo is going to work well for OKC because they do have the ability to score, and they're both huge, right? Adams is, I think he's 7 feet tall, and Kanter's 6'11". So I mean, they're both essentially 7 feet tall, and they can dominate in the paint. They can really use that size mismatch. But the real weapons, like we talked about here for OKC, are Durant and Westbrook. And Durant also has decent size. I don't, off the top of my head, remember how tall Durant is, but he's pretty freaking tall, right? So he's going to use that size. And they're going to have to beat them with rebounding and get second point or second chance points against the Warriors. So they're going, Enes and Kanter are going to have to use their size to get those offensive rebounds, which they did. It was halfway through the fourth quarter last night, and so 6 minutes left in the game. And I noticed a little, because I'm watching in a bar and I couldn't really hear what anyone was saying, but I noticed a little insert come at the bottom of the screen saying that the Warriors had 2 second chance points and the Thunder had 13 second chance points in that quarter. And that's a result of that size pulling down those rebounds. So those extra possessions for the Thunder are really going to come into effect here and really going to benefit them. And people forget OKC had them, almost had them twice in the regular season, twice. So it's not like this is going to be a roll down, roll over, and you can just dominate me sort of series. I think OKC is going to actually do very well against them. How about you? What's your prediction? I mean,
Well,
I went Thunder in six, seven, so.
I have no prediction, but I would love it if OKC won. But I'm kind of conflicted because I do, while I, playing that series against the Golden State Warriors really sort of inoculated me against them. I'm no longer like, just, oh, they're so great. I'm kind of over Golden State as well. But I do think that them winning the championship is what it's going to take for them to validate, this incredible record that they have this year. And I would feel kind of bad for them if they weren't able to do it. And I know that's just me being a softie. So
Yeah, I'm like,
I
no,
always root for
lose.
the underdog, and OKC is the underdog. So I would love to see OKC win. But I think Golden State probably will. I think it will go at least six or seven. And I think it's good. Every game is going to be fun.
It is going to be fun, and people are forgetting. Everyone talks about the Splash Brothers and how much they score and how no one can compare with that. And I'm thinking, are you joking me? Because the Durant Westbrook packs a pretty tough 1-2 punch, and they what I think it was their last series, right, where they were responsible for 85% of OKC's offense. 85%. By the time you contribute or you pulled into account their scoring, their assists, and their second chance points, and I mean, it was crazy. It was some knockout statistic, like 85%.
It would easily explain like what their problems were last year. I mean, I see that as I would call that a problem that two players are responsible for 85%. But I will also say I've never really been I've been only a begrudging fan of Kevin Durant and never been a fail of a Russell Westbrook fan. But I was really loving watching them play, and they were playing with so much heart. I was really enjoying that, and they don't seem like they're taking anything for granted.
No, but Westbrook is going to have to rein himself in a little and check himself if they're going to win this series. And I don't mean that he should hesitate more or drive less or be less aggressive. I think he needs to be a bit more level-headed and bring in his emotions
Like
because,
Draymond Green check himself.
yeah, because you probably saw last night, you know, there were a couple of really wild possessions, which is Westbrook's thing, right? And it usually works well for him. But there was the one where he was calling a timeout and Steve Kerr was convinced that he had traveled, and you could see Westbrook was really hyped and his team swarmed around him and kind of told him to calm down a little. And then a couple possessions later, he gets to the line and you could see him calming himself down. He like took deep breaths at the line, right? And I think if Westbrook can rein in his crazy a little bit, because he has a certain level of craziness to him, that he'll be very successful. But I don't want to see him back down as far as intensity or energy level, because it works really well in his favor. You know, he's got his signature, I'm going to shoot the ball and not wait to see what will happen and dive straight for the rebound. He does that quite a bit. You know, I love his level of energy and his intensity. But yeah, if he can keep himself pretty level-headed and get a little bit more control in some of these wild possessions, then I think OKC can win it for sure. And I am, like I said, I'm 100% on board for that. I don't want Golden State to win at all.
Well, we've kind of deviated from our regular Blazers coverage, but you know, it's that time of year, so I think we get a pass on this time. And I think before we move on, we should talk about the East just briefly. We talked a bunch about the Western Conference Finals. So for the Eastern Conference Finals, I know that you are a huge LeBron fan.
I worship him, and I am not afraid to say it.
Is he going to lead the Cavs to the finals?
I hope so. He has deferred a bit in these finals and in these playoffs. And he has really allowed Irving to lead quite a bit. I think Irving was even the series leader for scoring against Atlanta. And so I think LeBron needs to kind of get back to his, I'm going to take over and I'm going to dominate and I am going to make everybody sorry that they met me and kind of have that kind of attitude. And I think that they'll do all right. I think that Toronto has a better backcourt. I think it's really hard to compete with Lowry and DeRozan, and especially the way that they're playing. They're playing very fluid basketball right now. They are totally in sync and they have worked their butt off and defied all the odds. And they're kind of same as the Blazers, you know, kind of refused to believe that they could be written off or that they were the underdogs and really played their hearts out. So I think it's going to be a tough series, but I think Cleveland will win it in six.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't been keeping real close tabs on what's going on in the East, so I think a Cavs OKC finals would be super duper fun.
It would be, yeah.
But I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. I do think it's really interesting how the Cavs have added the 3-point shot to their arsenal. I think that's exciting, and I think it's something that whoever, if they make it out into the finals, you know, they're going to have to deal with that, because that's just not been a threat from them before. So I think that's kind of cool when a team can add something like that in the season and make everyone adjust.
I think both conference finals are going to be really exciting series. But before we are done for the day, I'm very eager to hear about the Basketball Hall of Fame. So tell me, what's it like?
Oh my gosh.
Down there in Springfield, right?
Okay, so I'm going to give you total permission to cut me off if I go on too long, because there was a lot of stuff to see and there's a lot of stuff to talk about, and I'm going to try to not go on for a super long time about it. So, Basketball Hall of Fame is in Springfield. And when we realized that we were going to be staying pretty close to it, we were like, we have to go. And I'm not sure.
Oh, of course.
I'm not sure I've mentioned this before, but my husband is actually a descendant of the Naismiths. He's related to James Naismith. His grandmother was a cousin of Dr. James Naismith. So we were like, well, we have to go see the family. So we always talk about the Naismiths. And so we went to the Basketball Hall of Fame in Springfield, and it's kind of a weird place. And I really had no idea what to expect when I got there, because like their website doesn't really give you any information about what it's going to be like or anything. So just for our listeners, if anyone ever goes, here is what you can expect. So when you first get there, they have this big basketball court, and it's the Jerry Colangelo Memorial Court, and anybody can come and play on it. And it's like when we were there on a Saturday, all these kids were having a birthday party, and there was, you know, tons of people shooting in baskets. And I think the basket, the backboards of the baskets, like, came from significant, different NBA, type things. So that was kind of fun. But what they, what you do is you go up to the third floor, and on the third floor, that's where they have everybody who's been enshrined or inducted into the Hall of Fame. And you come out, and the 2015 class, they have like a big case with memorabilia from the 2015 inductees. This last year it was, Dikembe Mutombo was one of them. And, you know, so they had his uniform and stuff like that. And from everybody who got inducted into the Hall of Fame. And then they have this big round concourse that goes all the way, like around the court. And up on the walls, they have a huge display of portraits of all of the winners. And then they have a plaque for every winner with, it has like a couple paragraphs describing like each person and what their contribution was to basketball. So you can have players, you can have coaches, you can have referees or contributors. And so since 1959, I think they've inducted like 319 players, and I'm going to tell you about every single one of them. No, I'm just kidding.
Nope. we have to end the podcast in 9 minutes.
But it was really, I really wanted to read every single one of them because everyone was so interesting, and they were all about all these different people. So like the first person inducted into the Hall of Fame in 1959 was James Naismith, but they also inducted what they call the first team. And the first team were all the guys that were in his class when he wrote the rules of basketball. So all those guys who were just there to take a PE class, they're in the Basketball Hall of Fame. So you go, and they're all listed by year, and you can go all the way around it. And every half dozen or so players, they also have like small artifacts, they're called, that have been donated. So like there was a gold medal from the 1992 Olympics, and there were like little charms from 1928 because they used to give those to the winners instead of trophies. There was like an old pair of Chuck Taylor Converse, you know, next to the Chuck Taylor display. So they had all kinds of cool, like little type memorabilia in this one hall. So after you get through all 318 or however many there are, then you can step into another display hall where they have like the larger memorabilia. So they have like all of the jerseys from, you know, there's, it's cool because it's basketball. It's not just the NBA. So they have international players. They have college players. They have a lot of women who've been inducted both for their college success and their WNBA success.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I learned so much about everybody, but I was reading them so fast because I wanted to get through it. And I thought, oh, I'll just, you know, they'll probably have like a guide in the gift shop afterwards where I can, you know, just buy the thing that'll tell me about everybody. Spoiler alert, they don't.
Oh, shoot.
So fortunately, I was taking pictures of everything that was really interesting to me. So now I can go back and look them up.
I was going to say, you sent me pictures. So yeah. Why not do that?
Yeah. Right. I did. I wish I'd taken even more. There was a lot of teams that had been inducted that were these barnstorming teams from early on before like the NBA existed. And they were just teams that would just go around and play other teams. Like the, you know, the Harlem Globetrotters are like, you know, a team like that now, but before there used to be a whole bunch of them. And some of them, there was like a one that was made of all women who like used to go out and play men's teams and do all these fun tricks and everything. So anyway, there's the memorabilia that has been donated by all of the Hall of Fame enshrinees. And then they have a separate historical display as well, which you can imagine that I loved. It had a lot.
Yeah, you're not allowed to go off on this. You can put a link in the thing.
I will add some pictures. So people who want to see any of the pictures, but they had, we talked about uniforms one time in one of our earliest podcasts, and they had some of these crazy uniforms that they used to wear. They used to wear uniforms where they had like, they're like a leotard where they had like crotch snaps. So they,
weird.
I know. So can you imagine if someone grabbed your uniform and you had those things on? And then they used to like have belts on their uniforms, and I don't know. It was super, super interesting.
Yeah. What did you see that was like, about the Blazers. Did you see much in relation to the Blazers there?
Yeah, I tried to track down all of the Blazers who had been enshrined, and so I did find. Let's see, I have to look at my pictures to refer. You know, so Clyde and Sabonis and Petrovic were all in there, and there's a lot of good Jack Ramsey stuff.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah,
that was really cool. They actually had a whole display in the larger display area that was just Jack Ramsey. But I did take issue with the fact that not a single picture of Jack Ramsey or anything, and none of them was he wearing plaid. I was like, really? You're gonna put all this Jack Ramsey stuff off, and you can't just do one like plaid coat?
You should send them a picture.
Yeah. So I don't know really who curates this stuff, because it was not the most finely curated museum I'd ever been to.
Okay.
Like, the other thing about Jack Ramsey is they obviously hadn't updated it in a few years because they didn't have his death on there. So it had been a while. They had updated it. There was also a typo in there. They called the Trailblazers one word. So I was just like, okay, I'm sure, you know, the best of intentions.
I make
all kinds of mistakes.
Even people in Portland still make that mistake. The Trailblazers is one word mistake. I mean, I was still making that mistake until like 5 or 6 years ago and thinking, oh, I have to look it up. I can't remember.
I know. I just thought the Basketball Hall of Fame ought to.
They should, yeah. Maybe they should hire you.
I would be glad to do a little bit of work for them. And again, I'm not saying I'm perfect. I make mistakes all the time. They also had Bill Walton. They had some good... they had some Bill Walton stuff there. And they also had the ball that was signed by the 1977 champions. They didn't have the ball signed by every single team, but they did have that ball, which I thought was...
What was the most recent Blazers paraphernalia that you saw?
Oh, God.
Can you recall? Or, like, photo or piece of information? Or...
I mean, really, probably Clyde stuff was.
Yeah.
Oh, well, they also had the Kurt Gowdy Award winners, and in 2012, I think that's a media award that Bill Shonley got.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah. Yeah.
And they had like a whole media display that was really interesting, and they had a great Craig Sager suit that was amazing.
That's nice.
It was a bunch of pictures of Craig Sager, but they did have like a list of all of the Gowdy Award winners, but it was like really tiny and it was off to the side, and I was like, I feel like that should have been bigger, because those Gowdy Award winners are, you know, they're the people who tell us about the media, who are telling us about what the teams are doing, and I just thought that would be bigger, but it wasn't.
You know what I think you should do is I think you should write a whole article for Blazers Edge about your experience there and post it, because I think people will want to hear more in depth about how it was, and post some pictures and stuff. I think that would be really cool.
Yeah, I will. I'll put some stuff up there, because it really was fun, and it was very strange, because when we were leaving, I was talking to my husband about, like, that was really weird. Cause it wasn't, when you visit it, like, don't expect to the Smithsonian. they have as much quality paraphernalia as the Smithsonian has, but it looks like it's put together more like somebody who would do like a Vegas place. It reminded me a lot of like the museum type things that you go to in Vegas. Like they have cool memorabilia, but they're not curated in quite the same way. Like, for one example is they had a display about the Spurs, and it had, you know, some jerseys and some pictures of them, and not a single one of them was labeled. Like,
oh, weird.
And it was, and I thought, okay, maybe the Spurs, they're just so great, they don't even need to label their stuff or whatever. But I just like, you know, it wasn't clear what any of the stuff was you were looking at. So you're not going to get the same type of experience that you would if you went to, like I said, like the Smithsonian. And I thought it was also like kind of overwhelming how much stuff there was. And there really wasn't a chance to like take a break or a chance to take any of it away with you unless you were taking a ton of pictures like I did.
Gotcha.
But if you're anywhere near the area, and you know, so we were going to Boston, and so when I looked and saw how close it was, I decided to go. So I would suggest to people, if they're anywhere near the area, it's totally worth your time. There's plenty of Trailblazers stuff to see there. like I said, lots of Jack Ramsey stuff. And one of the things that I sent you was the they had plays that were that had been drawn up by famous
Yeah.
coaches, including a Jack Ramsey play. So I want you to learn all of those so you can explain them all. That's your summer homework.
Okay.
You need to learn all those plays and then explain them all to me.
I
It
think
and play with Twitch.
there were only two, I think, that I wasn't very familiar with. So this should be a relatively easy
Okay,
assignment,
good.
but we'll touch base on that. Before we wrap up, though, I do want to say or ask you on a scale of 1 to 10, how excited you are about Terry Stotts being with us through 2020.
Oh, I'm like a 10.5.
Can
I'm
we go,
so,
hallelujah?
oh my gosh, I am so relieved that they just took care of it. And some people were like, oh my God, it took a really long time. Like, okay, really, 5 days is like, it could have stretched on for a super long time. I feel like they took care of business. They said, this is what our future is. I'm
I
so
think they were talking more about like why wasn't it done at some point during the regular season or like right when the regular season ended. But we all know that that's not how Olshay operates. So he wasn't going to do anything until our season ended anyway, because that's not where his focus is. He's very much, I'm going to focus on the season at hand and then we'll worry about it. But I think it's really exciting. I think that Terry Stotts is going to go down in history for how long he's been with the Blazers. Actually, that's an interesting thought. I wonder, outside of like Phil Jackson or Red Auerbach, like what the longest standing coaches
Stotts,
are. Yeah.
or not Stotts, Popovich.
Popovich,
I'll do
yeah.
that
Like,
homework next.
yes, thank you. That's your next assignment.
One of the things that I love about Terry Stotts is I think he's a great. He's so good at mixing in everything that was great about traditional basketball while being open to the fact that it's changing. And I think there's a lot of people who get stuck in the past or are only focused on the future. And I feel like Terry Stotts has been able to walk the line between, taking care of the fundamentals and what it is that makes basketball great and makes basketball players great, while at the same time allowing for the fact that players now are different and they expect different things out of the professional basketball experience maybe than people were able to get in the past. So I really like that. And one thing I always love about Terry Stotts is that I heard him in an interview once say that at the end of every meeting, whenever they have their coaches' meetings, at the end of every meeting, he always says, "Who do I need to talk to?" Because he knows that every player who needs attention needs that one-on-one attention from the coach. And he's always willing to do it. And he asks his other assistant coaches, "Who do I need to connect with?" And I just think that says so much about him as a person and why he's been so successful with this team.
Yeah, he's definitely a very versatile coach, and I think I really hope that he continues at this level of coaching so that we see yet another contract extension coming along in 2020, and that he's just with us for a very long time at this level, because I really, really like him as a coach. And I think the rest of our coaching staff will change. You know, Nate Tibbetts is now being interviewed by someone, I can't remember who.
Yeah, it's
The King, no, the Kings? No, Memphis.
is it Memphis?
Who knows?
Totally escaping my mind.
I know, we should have thought this through before
Yeah.
we brought it up. But I think the rest of the coaching staff clearly is going to change, but I really like Stotts as a staple. And hey, this gives me another 4 years to convince him to have a drink with me and be my best friend. So I'm excited about this extension.
I will do whatever I can to help make that happen for you so that you can
Thank
tell
you.
me all about it.
Okay, sounds great. Well, thanks for your time today, Tara. Enjoy the hot Portland weather that I hear you've been having.
Yes,
And
rain
I'm gonna
incident.
go put on my 7 layers to go to work in the great Alaskan outdoors. And we will catch Rip City in a couple of weeks. Until then, have a great afternoon.